Thank you all. And as always, I look forward to speaking with you again next week.
The previous program was Economic Update with Professor Richard Wolf, heard Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. here on WBAI New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. It is now 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up. Here we go.
El número que usted marcó no existe en la red telefónica. Verifíquelo, por favor, o consulte a su operadora. The number that you dial doesn't exist. Please, check your number or call your operator.
We're sorry. The number you have reached, 99.5 WBAI, is now off the hook.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Indeed, right here.
In Skype land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Good evening.
And we have Alex.
Good evening, everybody.
And we will have a special guest who we'll be introducing in just a couple of minutes, talking about all kinds of newsworthy things that have been going on in the world. And, of course, we'd like to hear from you as well. Our email address, oth@2600.com. Hey, I remember last week I was in a bit of a kerfuffle with Mastodon, the newest social media adventure. I don't think they were a big fan of the show because I got kicked off of it shortly after. I think maybe even during. And it's, you know, I learned a lot about Mastodon in the last week. I learned how easy it is to simply switch to a different server if you need to do that. And I needed to do that because I got kicked off. And the reason they gave me, though, it was very disturbing. This is chaos.social. They're not really affiliated with the Chaos Computer Club, as far as I know, but they're members, or there's some connection, but it's not I don't think that this is CCC doing this. But basically, my offense was posting simply the line that 1,000 Palestinian kids have been killed in the last week or so. And they said I needed to filter that because it might upset some people. And I took exception with the fact that I had to be concerned about upsetting news maybe being upsetting. And it just kind of spiraled downhill from there. But they basically said that I had to label that as politics. Saying 1,000 Palestinian kids have been killed is politics. Yeah, it wasn't going to work out. And, of course, this week that number has doubled. But I haven't dared to say that anywhere yet. But my new Mastodon instance, is Goldstein. Yeah, I decided to go a different way this time. Not Emmanuel. I decided to go with Goldstein. Goldstein at Mastodon.social, but it's not the Mastodon.social where you spell out Mastodon. It's the one where you spell Mastodon without the vowels. And since the vowels are where everybody screws it up, I think that's advantageous. So mstdn.social. And you can find me there speaking my mind about various things and paying the price. Yeah, it's okay. It's fine. It's wonderful. It's a lesson. And, yeah, I've talked to so many people about this over the course of, it's weird how word gets out to certain people. I've heard from people I haven't heard from in years. Hey, what's going on with this big, blow up you're having? One of the things people said to me was, Mastodon isn't the best at freedom of speech, which is something because I kind of thought it was better than Twitter, certainly. And I guess that's maybe a low bar. But yeah, you can have situations where people running a local server in Mastodon decide they don't like the letter B or something like that. And they can say, you are not allowed to use that. You can't do that. And you have to abide by those rules. Now, the reason I kind of ran into trouble here was because I didn't know about the rules. In fact, on the mobile app, if I click on rules, I got an empty page. So I just kind of assumed, common sense rules. Did not know that it was completely different. It all worked out. It's just another adventure in the world of free speech that we talk about here on WBAI. Any adventures from any of you folks or comments?
I did find out something interesting pursuant to a story we covered a couple weeks ago, which is that I went on the Omni website a couple days ago to try to track my rides, and they disabled that feature.
Omni being
the Omni card website. I remember we were talking about
right, in
privacy,
New York City.
And if you had somebody's credit card number, you could track their train trips.
So they disabled that feature.
They have disabled a lot of the features of the website until they are redesigned. There's no news, no updates, no anything. So I don't know if we can take credit for it not being there, but I don't know that we can't. So I'm comfortable doing that, too.
Well, if it ruined the fun for somebody, we'll take the credit for that, because that's what we do. It's ruin the fun for everybody. All right. Well, we have a bunch of letters I'd like to get to because they pile in sometimes. OTH@2600.com. Right now, people are typing letters to us.
We do encourage writing letters.
We do. We encourage writing, period.
Frequently.
Yeah.
We appeal to our listeners for that.
So I'm going to start with one we just got today, actually. We have been going back for quite some time. We only have a couple of minutes for this segment. This is from a fairly long-time listener, short-time magazine subscriber, who was listening to the first 20 minutes of last week's show. I would like to ask a question, as I see this happening almost all of the time now. Are you ever going to talk about actual hacking? Lately, there's nothing but politics and complaining. politics, is that word again? Just seems like every time you bring up something that is not specifically a technical issue that has to do with the world, it becomes politics, especially if it's something someone doesn't agree with. I've heard that with regards to COVID, with regards to what's happening in the Middle East, with regards to the various elections in this country, anything where it's a little bit controversial and people look tired of hearing about it. Well, we're not tired of talking about it or bringing up different aspects, such as the technological aspects, the hacker perspective, various things like that. But let me continue with the letter. Tonight, as I said, I was listening to the show. I downloaded, and it should have been called the Emmanuel Goldstein Complains Show, because that's all it was. Well, I believe I even prefaced the show or said at some point that, yes, I'm going to be complaining about something. But, in fairness, what I complain about is, the things like, for instance, Mastodon, something that we are all using or getting used to as part of a technological community. Or I was upset at Google the other week because they're labeling lots of legitimate mail as spam. You'll find that while I do tend to complain, I tend to complain about the things that are pertinent to our daily lives. And many times that leads to other people complaining, and sometimes complaining about me. And that's fine. Look, why do you think the complaints department is the most popular department of any company? Because people love to complain. Come on, you who wrote this letter, did you not feel good after writing it? Because you were complaining too. All right, we encourage people to complain. Complain all the time. It's so good for your blood pressure. It really is. Anyway, Emmanuel Goldstein, Complain Show. I realize I do not pay anything for this broadcast, but you could, of course, donate to WBAI. That's not paying for the broadcast. That's investing in the most awesome radio station around and a bastion of free speech. Whatever you make it, it's up to you. And you can do that by going to give2wbai.org or I believe even calling 212-209-2950. Don't quote me on that. I think they're manning those phones. But regardless, the website give2wbai.org is there for your pledge. So, yes, you can pay to keep voices like mine.
You can do it on a recurring basis, too, if you ask about the WBAI Buddy program and mm-hmm. how you can get involved with that.
That's right. That's right. The BAI Buddy program allows you to pay a small amount each month, and we add that up, and it turns into a bigger amount.
And then we can count on you and that those funds for our overhead, and it's a fantastic system.
Anyway, I know the history of 2600, the famous hacker magazine, a place to go and learn new things, or the history about old hackers and hacking. And guess what? We get complaints there a lot about politics. Even though 95% of articles barely touch the subject at all, and are mostly technical, people are still upset when they hear a viewpoint that they don't agree with. And that tends to be where the complaints come from. Please, I ask you to go back to your roots. Forget politics. Forget the hate. There are so many things you can talk about that are uplifting. Yeah, but you know what? We're not a Christian radio show. We're not going to be very, very uplifting at all. Consider us a dark radio show. You know, it's we do touch upon these subjects. You know, listing a bunch of hacker-related things, cybersecurity, Raspberry Pis, capture the flag. Yeah, okay, that's all fine and good. But we live in a world, and we're not closing our eyes to that world. And what we say is not said in other places, and it's important. And you have to also remember, we're part of a bigger community here. With WBAI, where we're on 24/7 and talking about all kinds of relevant things. There are people right now driving in their cars who are listening to us by accident. They just stumbled upon this radio station. That's the magic of radio. So for those people, we need to provide something more than a very narrow perspective of technology. Sure, we'll sneak that in. We'll definitely discuss that, but it can't be the only focus. Anyway, continuing here. Any of these subjects will be preferable to the constant hate and discontent I hear lately. Hate? Where does hate come from? Does anybody express hate here? I mean, you know, I hate being inconvenienced. I hate sometimes when, you know, my phone doesn't work properly. But such a strong word. You guys, are you picking up any hate from any of us?
No, I think generally we tend to be a rather optimistic bunch as these things go, kind of cheerful and positive most of the time.
I hate corruption. Hate when systems are wielded against people. I hate how things are going sometimes. But that's about as much as I can.
Well, could you filter that maybe and possibly use the word dislike instead of hate? And there's all kinds of things that we can do to improve that statement.
All right.
We'll work on it.
I'll try.
Okay, we're into the all caps section of the letter now. Enough with COVID vaccinations. I didn't know we were focusing on COVID vaccinations so much. Last week, oh, my God, this is what upsets people. Last week we mentioned that we got our shots. Kyle and I got our shots. I got a COVID shot, I got a flu shot, and I got a shingles shot. It feels good to say that. I got a shingles shot. Yeah. People seem to only be upset at the COVID shot for some reason. I don't know why. I really don't get this. This speaks to the crazy, and I guess it is, political climate in our country, where somehow it's fashionable to blame Democrats for everything. So apparently COVID is Democrats' fault. Because all I hear are people complaining about having to wear masks. It wasn't because of Democrats we had to wear masks. It was because of that virus that was visiting us for quite some time that we had to wear masks. So I don't understand how that is history is being rewritten. Perhaps our guests later on can tell us how that kind of thing is set in people's minds and it actually works. Let people be grown-ups, make their own decisions, and yes, I'm vaccinated. I just do not need to hear it every week. I listen. Okay, congratulations on being vaccinated, but a lot of people aren't being grown-ups. A lot of people do need a reminder. Only 3.5% of the people in this country have gotten vaccinated for the latest revision of COVID that's coming down the pike. So, yeah, we need public service announcements. We need to remind people, you know? Anyway, I listen to many podcasts on my way to and from work, and yours is the only one that hardly ever talks about the field. Well, it could be a reason for that. We're not a podcast. We're a radio show that happens to be on the Internet, which I guess makes us a podcast when you're listening to it on the Internet, but we are a radio show.
Not by choice. Not a podcast by choice, right?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Please have a great day. Signed, Jay Chass. And, Jay, thank you for your letter. Seriously, I do thank you for your letter. Critiques notwithstanding, valid critiques. I mean, we'll address them and, we will take them into account. And please continue to, voice your opinion as well. It's what it's all about. Did somebody have something? Yes, Rob.
Yeah. This comes up a lot. This has come up so many times over the years regarding this show, regarding the magazine, the conferences, all the different hacker things we do, and we and so many other people in our community. And what I've always said is, like, I am a hacker. I embrace that label. I'm also a political activist, and I didn't become a hacker because I was a political activist. I became a political activist because part of being a hacker is looking around and seeing things and wondering, how can these be improved? How could things be changed? How could things be tweaked? What can I do to enact the change I want to see in the world? And that comes from my hacker mindset, my hacker outlook. And so, yes, looking at what would be labeled politics with a critical eye and postulating various things we could be doing better is, I think, part of the hacker spirit that drives so many of us.
You know, there is no part of our world that cannot be improved by the hacker perspective. That we've had people who have gone into prison and written articles about what it's like there from a hacker perspective, who have called us on the phone and told us what they see that nobody else is noticing. These are very valuable insights. There is nothing that is off limits to the hacker mind. Alex, I believe you had something.
Yeah, I was just going to suggest, I think we should focus the rest of the show on the new Republican Speaker of the House. I think that would really make our listeners happy.
We're having trouble with your levels. His levels are too high.
Can you patch that through to the
turn
feedback?
Turn them down to zero. I think that's about, yeah, that's fine.
Connective, patch them right to the feedback.
You had something, Phil?
Oh, no. I hear this critique a lot as well. And I have a couple ways of thinking about it. I think everybody does the best they can, and I think for just a small reason, I think politics might be coming through a little bit, is the tendency or the lessening of the divide and the influence of technology, both in the lobbying and political sphere, but in our daily lives in general, and much of what is going on in the political side, in legislation and judicial rulings. Many of those things involve technology ever more now. So I think that inherently some of the topics that are hacking or that involve hacking or the specter of it or the weaponization of it, security concerns, communication in general, those are going to seep into that world because that world is far more, far better suited than it was maybe 20, 30 years ago in the 80s or something. People didn't really understand what technology, what the implication would be and how, pervasive it would be every day. So that I think is an accelerant. But the other thing that I think is dogging the situation a little bit is, and I could go off on a tangent on all the different reasons, but my main culprit I think is that there is a lot more secretive ness around knowledge. People aren't sharing as much because the curiosities aren't there. These systems aren't as new and unfamiliar and a mystery that people are playing around with. And I really think there's a whole area regarding software development and security techniques and proprietary information and so on. And then that is basically being heavily cloistered both by the government in many ways, but also the private sector and specialists in general. So we encourage as much as we can, and of course the approachability factor with the radio show. We want people tuning in to not be in the middle of a section of code we're parsing on air or something. So those are my initial takeaways. I have some deeper personal feelings about this as well.
And perhaps we can get into that in overtime, which follows this show over on YouTube. You can get the link at the 2600.com webpage, or just go to channel 2600 on YouTube at 8 o'clock. We're still going through a couple of letters here. This is from our friend Santiago in Madrid, in Spain. Santiago has put together an archive without anyone asking him to do this. He just took it upon himself to put this together, and it's awesome. He basically has a transcript, a pretty good transcript of the show. Every single episode going back to 1988. He just fixed the issue that someone mentioned on last week's chat, where links on some pages were failing with the 404. But if you go to offthehook.cc, you can see his work. You simply enter a show and you'll see pretty much all the words that were spoken in that show. And have you guys had a chance to play with this at all? It's really pretty awesome.
We have. We've been playing with it, and it's really fun to just type in various things into the search box and find out when we were talking about them. And, the transcripts are AI-generated. They're a little rough. They don't attribute the various people, the various voices, but it gives you a starting point, and you can then look at what episode that was, pull it out of our archive, and have a listen. And it's a lot of fun.
And, yes, every show is archived, 2600.com/offthehook, going all the way back to 1988. It's pretty interesting. Thank you, Santiago, for all your work putting that together. Just another example of how people dive into projects and produce really interesting things that we didn't even think of.
Those kind of efforts really stand out to us, and we do notice those kinds of contributions and that spirit. It's so magical when people get into stuff like that and share something so cool and their hard work too. Something that a lot of people could potentially take and go in different directions with.
And finally, a letter from PRD. I thought the conversation on last week's show about Mayor Adams using AI translations for outreach was very thought-provoking. I think I fall on the side of it being disingenuous, but this will probably become normalized very soon, so I'm not sure it's worth getting too worked up about. We're talking about Mayor Adams calling people and speaking Mandarin on the phone when he doesn't speak Mandarin. It's simply AI using his voice to do this. Scared the hell out of a lot of people. It also reminded me of another story I read recently. Spotify is rolling out a feature initially for select podcasts. Oh, God. Using their platform, which will automatically translate their programs into various languages. The process uses OpenAI and can do the translations after training on a small sample set of podcast episodes. The underlying service will not be made available to the public for fear of abuse. How long that embargo lasts is anyone's guess. I'm curious to know how you all feel about this. How would you feel about Off the Hook being automatically translated using your voices? Well, thank you, PRD, for opening up that kettle of worms. Actually, you know, I'm kind of curious. I'd like to see what that sounds like. You know, having me speaking Serbo-Croatian or something, and talking about hacking and not having any idea what I'm saying, but in my voice.
I think it would really challenge us because the potential for communicating with people all hearing different translations of it I think to me implies that we would get a lot of feedback in different languages and possibly be overwhelmed, but maybe we're up for that challenge.
Yes. Rob, did you have something?
Yeah, I find it kind of unsettling just because I don't know what the translation version of me would be saying, and the fact that it would be my voice presenting that makes it seem like it would be me, but not me. And it's sort of like computer translations are very clever these days, but they're still not perfect. And I don't want some, you know, robot version of me sounding like the other language's version of "all your base are belong to us." Especially in a show like ours where we talk about a lot of technical things and things that might not be in the standard translation dictionaries, there's potential for all sorts of mess-ups and things.
Well, you know,
and,
we can trade voices. You can have my voice, and it'll read your parts, and then maybe, Gila, you can read for me. And we could even have celebrity voices come in and just use those voices. I could have George W. Bush read Alex's lines. How about that? No, I'm just kidding. Or am I? Okay, so that's pretty much all for letters. I just wanted to show you folks one more thing before we get to our special guest. I got this this mailer the other day. I know, Alex, you're particularly sensitive to political outreach. This is when your kid is targeted on YouTube for various various candidates and things like that. But this was just a general mailer from the Democratic New York State Democratic Committee. And it was basically this big postcard. It said, in all caps, "Who you vote for is private, but whether you vote is public record." And then, on the left side, it had 3 years, 2020, 2021, and 2022. Now, I was out of town in 2021, and it's reflected here, because 2020 it says voted, 2021 it says did not vote, and 2022 it says voted. Next to that, Election Day is November 7th, polls will be open 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., "We will update your voting record after Election Day after confirming whether you voted." I don't know who put this together, but it sounds so hostile and so invasive. I mean, yes, I know that this information is public record, but why are they advertising to anybody who can read this postcard going through the mail when I voted and when I didn't, and kind of sounding threatening, like, you know, "Whether you vote is public record." Like, okay, so you can find out if I voted or not, then what? And then saying, "We will update your voting record." Now, I don't think the Democratic Committee updates the voting record. I think that's pretty much the election board that does that, but whatever. I don't know. This does not seem like most well-thought-out idea here. They could have been promoting a candidate. That would have been nice, instead of threatening voters, but I don't know. Anyone get something similar to that, Alex?
I didn't receive anything like that. I would have been appalled if I did. I think it's a very poorly conceived idea to try to get out the vote. It's very Orwellian in nature. Mm-hmm. And I think we're using Orwellian in the right way this time, not like Albert Coxcomb was using it in his article last week that we incited about the mayor using AI and that being Orwellian. I think this is truly Orwellian. This is somebody looking over your shoulder and saying, "I know if you've been naughty or nice, and we hope that you're going to continue to be nice." It's really weird. It would creep me out.
Alex, you have sort of a Battlestar Galactica effect on your voice. I'm not exactly sure what that is, but maybe you could get a little closer to a microphone or something like that. We'll sort that out. But yes, point taken. And now we move on to our special guest, our friend Welton Chang from Human Rights First. Joining us, welcome to the show.
Hey, Emmanuel. Hey, everyone. It's great to be on again.
So now, tell us something about Human Rights First. And by the way, I should point out, Alex and Welton are both on the Tech Advisory Board for Human Rights First.
Go
ahead, Welton.
You want to go?
Yeah, no, you go ahead. Go ahead. We can make a clarification together. Sure.
Well, I've now moved over. I'm the CEO, co-founder of a startup called Pure Technologies, and we work on, you know, hate speech detection, disinformation, and that sort of stuff. But previously, yes, I was at HRF. I was their first chief technology officer, and Alex and I are both on the tech advisory board for the organization. And obviously, it's a historic human rights organization based in New York City. Does a lot of great work on the border, in Ukraine, Afghanistan. Basically, you name it, hotspot for human rights stuff going on, they're there. And very proud to be continue to be affiliated with the organization.
And Welton, do you want to talk a second about, PIRA and your work at Human Rights First and how it led to PIRA? And then about what PIRA is, and then I want to sort of dive right into some difficult substantive questions for you.
Well, sure. I mean, the briefest way to put it is we were building some technology at HRF looking to detect concerning noxious content across the Internet. In the lead up to Jan 6, we saw a lot of activity on the platforms that we were monitoring. We tried to warn people that something might happen that day, and then, of course, you know, Jan 6 occurs on January the 7th, and a few months thereafter, Human Rights First asked me and asked us if we'd be interested in basically spinning out as a venture-backed startup. So for the last 2 years or so, we've been plugging away, building tech, serving our clients. We have close to 30 clients now. And, you know, it's just an enormously consequential time, I think, when you look across what's happening on smaller social media platforms. I hear Emmanuel had some problems with Mastodon. You know, these are the places where the start of small fires, get their start. And then as these issues take off, they kind of migrate over into bigger platforms like Twitter, Facebook, et cetera. And, you know, I think disinformation, specifically what's going on between Israel and Hamas and the broader Middle East, that's something that we're seeing explode across these platforms. And we hear day in, day out that this is the most amount of, you know, by volume, disinformation, misinformation, whatever label you want to put on it, that people have encountered in quite some time. You know,
we're going to get into that in detail in a moment. But maybe you could explain to us the difference between misinformation and disinformation, because we hear those terms a lot.
Yeah, misinformation generally is somebody just being mistaken about what they're putting up. It's not intended to deceive the recipient, the reader, but disinformation is intended to deceive people. There's another category that the U.S. government likes to use called malinformation. That's really kind of factual information being taken out of context. And, somebody slapping a new caption or title on a video that actually occurred but may not be, in the place where the sender says it is.
Malinformation. I've never heard that before. Malinformation. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. You know, the government, they love their acronyms. MDM, you know, they kind of sweep it all up into a single term. I think MDM may actually be more of a mouthful than saying disinformation, but probably one of the reasons why they've done that is because it captures the range of content that could potentially influence these conversations that are happening online. So,
well, now let's look at what everyone is focusing on these days, the situation, horrible situation in the Middle East. What have you noticed? What's different about this?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference that we've observed is the ways in which the volume of content and the amount of repurposed video, right? For one thing, there's just so much war footage out there now as a result of Ukraine, and prior to that, the previous conflicts in the Middle East, specifically Syria, have generated just a plethora of video evidence that people are now repurposing, reusing in different contexts, specifically on X, Twitter. And I think part of what we're observing is the result of platforms deciding not to moderate the content as much, and also, maybe change the way in which they're amplifying content. There was a report that was put out recently from the Center for an Informed Public. They're based in the University of Washington. And, it was extremely well done, I thought. And one of the things that they pointed out was that the top 10 or so Twitter accounts, X accounts, that were putting content related to Israel Hamas on the platform, they were able to reach, I think, more people than the top 10 media organizations were able to on X.
Wow.
Despite those accounts not having as many followers as, the BBC or the New York Times, who have journalistic standards, who do fact-checking, who do verification, who try not to report things before they are able to do multi-source, verification. And these are accounts, I think, most notably have been amplified by Elon Musk as well. People have pointed out that, hey, these two specific OSINT accounts that Musk has directed people to, have a checkered history of posting content that's actually turned out not to be true.
Yeah, you know, one of the main problems on X Twitter, that's a good name for it, isn't it? X Twitter. One of the problems is that anyone can get a blue check now and get that kind of confirmation that what they're saying must be true because they have a blue check, but anyone could just pay a certain amount of money and get that. Used to mean something. Used to actually mean that some kind of verification was enacted to prove that the person or entity was who they said they were. But now it could be anybody. So when you read something on X Twitter, it's really up to chance whether or not you're reading the truth. I just wonder how much of this has made its way into the mainstream media itself, where you see things being broadcast that are fake, that are based on misinformation or disinformation.
Yeah, I mean, to the point about blue checks, right? It takes a little bit of a cognitive energy for people to realize that it no longer means the thing that it used to mean. Because we have gotten so used to the blue check being meaningful, and now it doesn't have the same meaning as it did before. And it also requires people to kind of be aware that this is what's happening with that that symbol of credibility. And you know, I think part of the issue is there's such a rush to be the first to say something, and if you're in the mainstream media and you're trying to break news. It actually kind of harms the enterprise a bit because in this rush, you may be reporting information that turns out not to be true, and then the critics will point back to that and say, well, look, you're not reliable either. You're just as unreliable as Rando on Twitter X, which, again, journalistic standards, right, and how much effort the news organizations go through in order to put out the information they do put out, as opposed to, again, Rando on Twitter with 100,000 followers, going out to Telegram, downloading a video off of the Hamas account on Telegram, putting it on Twitter and saying, breaking news.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't compare. And it's really disconcerting that's what passes as credible information consumption these days.
Yeah, you know, so. one of the examples in the past week was the blast at the hospital in Gaza, which was initially reported as an Israeli strike through much of the media. When it became clear that perhaps this wasn't the case, that it was an errant rocket from Islamic Jihad instead. Most media tended to say, okay, this is being claimed by the Israeli authorities, and this is being claimed by the Palestinian authorities. That, I think, was the right way to do it. Unfortunately, what Al Jazeera did instead was double down and keep saying that this was the result of an Israeli strike when it was, the evidence was showing that it was not. To me, that was a rare glimpse of how they completely dropped the ball on that particular story. However, today we learn that the main bit of evidence that was being presented by everybody to prove the Israeli military's side wasn't what it said it was. In fact, it was something that exploded in the air and had no effect on the actual hospital. So now it's basically still being determined who was responsible for that. But it's interesting to see how different media outlets dealt with that, some admitting they were wrong, some refusing to admit another possibility, others saying they simply don't know. And I think that might be the most responsible thing to do is say you simply don't know when you don't.
Yeah, I mean, there's a term, the fog of war. It's been popularized over the years, and that's what's happening. It's hard to get information. It's hard to get factual information. It's hard to know what exactly it is you're looking at, some grainy surveillance footage. I think in this case, I had many people texting me asking me, who did this? And the best response I could give was, we don't know yet. You have to let the facts come out. You have to evaluate the facts. You have to evaluate who's sending the facts. And then again, I think the rush to judgment, and I'll say in this case, some of the mainstream media outlets who then went back and said, no, we're just reporting what Hamas said. That's a cop out.
Yeah.
Because you put a giant headline broadcast that. And for you to then go back and say, well, no, in actuality, we're just relaying something that's newsworthy. It's kind of the same reasoning that people gave, four or five years ago to say, why are you covering Trump so much? Well, it's because it's newsworthy, right? We're in the business of truth. We're in the business of finding the truth, or should be, right? A first cut at it. And that, I think, requires being circumspect in situations where you just don't know what happened.
Yeah, that's such a fascinating distinction to think that we live in this world where we have to separate news from the truth. That's really a scary kind of concept. I hadn't thought of it that way. But you guys literally peer into a whole spectrum of these unmoderated kind of extremist social media channels, right? So I'm wondering, since the Israeli-Hamas conflict has kicked off, what have you been seeing in terms of anti-Semitism, in terms of conspiracy theories? Give us a taste of what it's like to live in that world for a day or several weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we started noticing right away a significant increase in anti-Semitic imagery being posted. Also, Islamophobic, anti-Muslim imagery being posted. This came in the form of memes. It came in the form of repurposed, pictures that have been promulgated over the years. And it was to the point where it was like, 10 times what we normally saw. And it's not like these places weren't rife with anti-Semitism to begin with. There's plenty of that content on these platforms already. But you take that elevated level, and then you amp it up by tenfold. We're basically awash in all of this hate speech. And, I think part of what's happening is there's a confluence of multiple conspiracy theories all coming together as a result of this conflict. For one thing, many people on the platforms that, we gather data from are anti-Semitic, also Islamophobic. So there's kind of this inner turmoil happening where you're trying to decide whether it's you're going to come out hating the Jews more or hating the Muslims more, right? Which is really sad, but that's part of what's happening. And I think the other thing is the events really played into some of the existing conspiracy theories that have been around for, hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, about the Jewish people. This kind of content is on these platforms all the time. It's just been amplified much more. And that may be the reason why we're seeing so many more kind of real world acts of hate, mm-hmm. of people going and attacking synagogues and places of worship. And, there was that young boy that was murdered, I think, in Chicago, the young Muslim boy. And, that's the things that happen online do certainly impact the real world in a lot of ways, and changes attitudes. It changes people's beliefs. It hardens them to an extent and could also motivate people to commit heinous acts. And that's one of the things that we are growing, kind of increasingly worried about, is just how much of this stuff is out there now. And it's been elevated for some time and has not come down.
I know so. In London, we've seen a rise of, I think, 1,300% in anti-Semitic incidents this year. That's not insignificant. And a spike in New York as well since October 7th. Which is very disturbing. But I want to ask you, is there a way to distinguish between people who are exhibiting this anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim feeling, between people who are legitimately criticizing policy in that region, whether it be from the Palestinian Authority, Hamas, Palestinian cause in general, or the Israeli government?
I think you can certainly criticize governments without resorting to speech that crosses the line in terms of the First Amendment. So I don't think criticizing a government requires you to say things like death to or kill or this person should hang. You know, those are not phrases I think typically associated with, you know, proper political discourse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yes, there are ways to distinguish between those, right? The speech is a matter of degree, and probabilistic scoring that occurs with the AI that we built, you know, that there's always a human in the loop in terms of who passes judgment on this stuff, right? And we don't do that as a company. We help our clients, you know, basically look through all this data. They're the ones that are doing things like making law enforcement referrals if they see a credible threat pop up, or starting to deep dive into a specific user because this user has said that they're, you know, I'm making plans to go and attack a synagogue, right? Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, look, I think there's the problem with how we conceptualize free speech on the internet a lot of the time is we don't necessarily think about the ways in which speech has been constrained in a legal way by, you know, Brandenburg, by, you know, Supreme Court cases in the past where, you know, incitement to violence is not protected, right? And, you know, there's good reason for that. And there's even better reason for that online because you can reach such a wider audience. And if you're telling a million people to go and harm a specific, you know, race or class of people, that can be quite, you know, it could lead to quite dire consequences in the future.
It's insane that we have to say that, you know, in this day and age, after all the history that we have been privy to. But we do. We absolutely do. And it's very sobering. One thing I'm rather curious about what difference does it make when one side has an overwhelming technological advantage to the other side? Does it become easier to spread disinformation when you have such an advantage, or is it the disadvantage that lends itself to spreading complete lies, maybe out of frustration? Or do you just see abuses on either side, regardless of who has the tremendous advantage?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that in a lot of ways, these platforms equalize power. So even if you've been deplatformed from X, you're still able to get your audience, you know, from Telegram, and you're still pushing content on Telegram, and that's reaching a wider audience. So in a lot of ways, in the way I think about it, the technology is a great leveler, and you don't need, you know, giant broadcast antennas and a whole sophisticated apparatus to do things like fact-checking and production and makeup and all that stuff. You really just need a smartphone, an internet connection, and a few accounts on these platforms, and you can have the same amount of reach. So it's a you know, I guess you can call it David versus Goliath scenario, where David is equipped with enormous communication power. And, you know, everyone has a content delivery network basically at their fingertips with, you know, a phone and a Dropbox account, right, or a phone and a Telegram account. So, I think that it doesn't require super sophisticated apparatus to do all those things.
Well, it just seems like no matter what side you're a part of, you're very much vulnerable to being manipulated and having fake information spread. You know, we've been saying this ever since we started publishing. Imagine today's technology in the 1930s. And I think that might, you know, scare the crap out of people when they think about that, like the potential that whatever the technology was, whether it was simply the ability to create databases back in the 1980s or now where you're able to manipulate mobs of people into doing crazy things, it's I think that's an eye opener as to the potential danger that that exists now.
Yeah, and building on that, well, I wanted to also make this point. You know, we've talked about this numerous times on this show and also in the magazine, that what happens online, all of this digital hatred, very often spills over into physical violence. And it doesn't take an ongoing war to have that cause. But what we've also been seeing, too, just in terms of this discrediting of information, is also the discrediting of the people who are the fact checkers, the people who are doing the legitimate reporting as well. And it seems like that's something that might be new in this particular conflict. Hope to get your thoughts on that.
And these, I'll have to be quick because we only have 2 minutes left.
Oh, yeah. Look at the time. Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say that, you know, if you see some of the responses to some of the more forward-leaning credible journalists who are tackling things like this information, online, I'm specifically, you know, trying to get an audience on Twitter X, right? Like, a lot of the replies are quite extreme in terms of, like, going after these people on a personal basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the issue is institutions across the board have been tarnished over the last, you know, couple of decades. And what's kind of happened, what's happened to those organizations is also now kind of infecting the folks who are working on disinformation as a field. And, you know, that's a tactic, right? It's a tactic typically employed by authoritarians and dictators where you try to discredit the critics, right, by saying that, oh, no, they're lying to you and, you know, they have an agenda, et cetera, or they apply some ideological lens to it. And we are not immune to that here in the U.S., just because we still live in democracy to some extent. So,
Welton Chang, I hope you're able to stay with us for overtime at 8 o'clock on YouTube. Can you give out contact information for our listeners?
Yeah, if you want to reach out, learn more about Pyra, it's Welton, Welton, at Pyra, P-Y-R-R-A, tech, T-U-C-H, .com. Or you can go to our website, drop us a line there. We have a newsletter that we put out. It's free every week, and it covers basically what happened on the fringe internet over the last week. So, yeah, if you want, sign up for the newsletter.
And our email address is oth@2600.com. Please write to us with your thoughts and feelings. And we'll be back again next week, next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Overtime, 8 p.m. on YouTube channel 2600. We'll see you soon. Good night.
Do you think this war will ever end?
I don't know. They'll just have another one.
I want to get out of here. Don't you?
Not that much.
So you like it here?
It's not that bad.
You're in a foxhole with a war raging outside.
I know. That's why I'm sure glad I've got my WBAI.
Be glad you've got your WBAI. Become a member online at WBAI.org. Now, do it now.